Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Clones, welcome to the Daily Jungle, TGIF. The grind includes Friday. We were all over the NFL draft and the big moves made by John Lynch and the reaction that it got from Bears fans when they traded up just one spot to get Mitch Trubisky.
No!
Also, three good guests, CBS Sports' Jason Lockenfora, SI's Ben Golliver, and Arizona Cards GM Steve Keim, fresh off selecting Hassan Reddick in the first round. Lots of show, including Alvin's spectacular week that was. Alvy, go ahead and roll that thing. Let me go right to the second pick. And the fact that I'm not starting with the Browns means that they did not have the worst draft ever, something that was a very real possibility. Dodged that scud, Browns fan. You've got that going for you, which is nice. Really, really nice. The fact that I'm not starting with them is a very good sign. The fact that I'm starting with Chicago is not a good sign. Not for Bears fan. Is there anybody anywhere who did not have the same exact response when they saw what the Bears did last night? Response being, what the hell? I know how Bears fan reacted when he saw what his team did. He let out a guttural, no!
No!
They were not happy with what they saw.
With the second pick in the 2017 NFL Draft, the Chicago Bears select Mitchell Trubisky.
Oh my God, no! No!
Mitchell Trubisky.
What the f***? F***ing Doug McDermott f***ing all over again. I hate the f***ing Chicago sports.
Mitchell Trubisky.
No way! No way!
It much worse than no! I interrupt this take for the first tweet. Brent and PC tweets, good morning, Chicago. How's my ass taste?
Tell me how my
sign
ass
the 49ers. A little early for that. In fact, the second hour would be a little early for that. The third hour would be a little early for that. I got to hear that one more time. I love the thing I hate about YouTube. I sometimes love about YouTube when guys turn the camera on themselves. I normally have no need for that, no time for that, unless it's a Bears fan reacting to what they saw last night.
With the second pick in the 2017 NFL Draft, the Chicago Bears select Mitchell Trubisky.
Oh my God, no! No!
Mitchell Trubisky.
What the f***? What the f***? F***ing Doug McDermott f***ing all over again. I hate the f***ing Chicago sports.
Mitchell Trubisky.
Oh! No way! No way!
That's hilarious. It really is. I mean, that is funny. Sorry, Bears fan, that is funny. Because that's a real thing. That really happened. I mean, I saw it as it was happening, and even now I can't believe that they did what they did or how badly Niners GM John Lynch worked them. They trade three extra picks to move up just one spot. Just one spot. And for what? The right to draft Mitch Trubisky, a guy who as recently as only a year ago had not even started a game in college, a guy who couldn't beat out Marquise Williams in North Carolina. The same Williams who's not even in the NFL right now. And they did all of that after signing Mike Glennon to a pretty big free agent contract just a few weeks prior. Oh. And speaking of Glennon, let me go ahead and cut you clones off before you even think about getting started. The Bears did not. I repeat, the Bears did not get a look at Mike Glennon's physique in person and then think to themselves immediately, we got to make a move. We have to make a move. I guarantee that that had nothing to do with this trade. So clones, save your lame tweets and your lame emails about a particular family that shall remain nameless because that family does not exist. Not in my world. Save your lame content about the aforementioned family being pissed because one of their own was disrespected. The family does not exist. I am not going to go there. But I will go here. What the hell were the Bears thinking? Did they just turn the draft over to the worst fantasy player they could find? How do you give up all of that to move up just one slot to take a flyer on a guy who has made all of 13 career starts and could not beat out Marquise Williams? Again, they didn't just burn the second pick overall on a guy who's a huge question mark. They gave up a lot to take that risk. So obviously, they think this guy's the second coming. And they also think that there were others who thought the same thing. Well, you don't make that move. They better be right, because that's the kind of move that wrecks careers if they're not. Time will tell. But I personally do not need to wait to tell you that I hate that move right now, and that John Lynch just turned the Bears inside out. Bears fans, go ahead and hit me up. Hit me up, Bears fans. But you know what? Even if you don't, it doesn't matter. I don't need to ask you for your reaction. I already know what your reaction is.
The Chicago Bears select Mitchell Trubisky.
Oh my God, no! No!
Mitchell Trubisky.
Doug McDermott all over again. I hate the Chicago sports.
Mitchell Trubisky.
No way! No way!
Love the way that guy gets in a Doug McDermott blast, too. What's up with that? Marcus Fizer didn't want any of that. Jason, Luck and Fora, JLC, good morning. What's up? How are you?
What's going on, Jim? Hope all's well, man.
Everything's good here. How about you? How are you feeling, JLC?
I'm good. A little under the weather last night, but we fought through it. We got through our epic live stream down here at CBSSports.com in Florida, and we'll do it again for the rest of the draft. So can't wait for 7 o'clock.
And you're right here right now. So that's what you do, man. That's who you are. You grind through
it. There you go.
All right, so the Browns start things off. They take Myles Garrett with the first pick. Cleveland obviously needs a quarterback, but Hugh Jackson really wanted Garrett. So what do you make of the fit for Garrett in Cleveland, and what's that say about who's calling the shots there?
Well, I mean, look, he's the consensus top player in the draft. I'm not saying he was number one on every single board, but certainly on a lot and most. And if he wasn't one on boards, he wasn't, you know, far off at two or three. So it makes sense. The defense has been horrible for a long time. As much as we talk about the needs at quarterback, that was a bad defense against the pass, against the run, against play action, against shotgun, against spread. I mean, whatever you threw at them, they really could stop. So getting after the passer is always at a premium. Next to quarterbacks, it's probably the second most important position out there, and they get a guy who has big time potential. So I get that. Obviously, quarterback is still a huge hole there. We'll see if they do something tonight. I will not believe a Jimmy Garoppolo trade is impossible until we get through this, we get through tonight. It doesn't happen, then it's probably unlikely this year. Doesn't mean it won't happen next year. We have to, the Pats have to franchise him and whatever. But, yeah, I don't think you can, quibble with the Myles Garrett pick. The rest of what the Browns do, though, remains, as always, open for interpretation and questioning.
Jason Lockin for is an NFL insider for CBS and CBSSports.com. Of course, Jason, things get pretty interesting right after that when you find out Chicago moves up to the third spot, or from the third spot to the second spot. Remember, they're 3-13 last season. Their defense has not been good for a long, long time. It's a draft with a ton of talent on defense, and they just signed Mike Glennon to that free agent contract that nobody else was offering him. Knowing all of that, what did you think when they drafted Mitch Trubisky?
It's a little baffling. Not just that they drafted him, but they moved up one spot to draft him when San Francisco wasn't going to draft him, and I guess maybe you think the Browns would trade up to two and get the first two players in the draft. That always seemed pretty remote. I mean, the Browns were more looking at Trubisky at five or six. I don't know who they were competing with Trubisky, for in that spot, for Trubisky. But I'd also say, Jim, I don't know who they were competing with for Mike Glennon when the money got north of $10 million and he starts making, he's making $18.5 million this year guaranteed. Now, they could cut him after that, but still, that's a sizable commitment. They're obviously in desperation mode there. They're going in double-fisted in free agency and the draft for a quarterback. But you make a move like that, you trade up one spot just to get this guy. I don't know how long the leash will be for Mike Glennon. When you make a move this bold, and yes, Trubisky is raw, but, I don't know how long you're going to be able to hold this off. I mean, Johnny Manziel wasn't ready either, but he ended up playing, right, some in that first year because that's a bad team, and they're not going to win a lot of football games, even if Glennon plays well. So I'm a little baffled, but there's a lot of heat on a rookie. Well, he's not a rookie anymore, but a first-time GM, Ryan Pace, who's a few years into his first tenure now, and he obviously felt like strength in numbers at the quarterback.
Clones, can you give me 1 minute, just 1 minute of your time to talk to you about Ferguson? Ferguson is the nation's largest distributor of plumbing products, but their playbook goes deeper than plumbing. Pro contractors know to depend on Ferguson for the best in waterworks, HVAC, and facilities maintenance products in the game. Ferguson has over 20,000 knowledgeable associates always working for you. Combine that with Ferguson's 1,400 locations and 24/7 online ordering, and you will always have the home team advantage. See why the pros pick Ferguson at Ferguson.com today. That's Ferguson. Now it's back to the Daily Jungle. Jason Lock and Ford joining us. Now, when you mention a rookie GM, how about the 49ers and John Lynch? They take Solomon Thomas with the third pick, right? They take Ruben Foster with the 31st pick. They add more picks. What do you make of how John Lynch handled his first day of his first NFL draft?
I was very impressed. I mean, to the trade that they made, I mean, it's a complete win-win for them because they weren't taking a quarterback. So they were looking at the best defensive player in the draft, not named Myles Garrett. And they would have had their pick of the litter at 2, and they still had their pick of the litter at 3 because Chicago was moving up for a quarterback. So you factor all that in. And then Reuben Foster's a guy who, you know, they made it clear they were open for business at pick number 2 and that they were willing to move down. If they had moved down 10, 12 spots, Reuben Foster would have been their guy. They got him at 31 by, you know, sacrificing a fourth-round pick down the road, you know, and they got a bunch of picks from Chicago already to drop down one spot before. I think it's an absolute no-brainer. Now, Solomon Thomas is still going to have to be a player, and there's some questions about him. We'll see. Nothing's a slam dunk, but certainly it seems like a great fit. And, if Reuben Foster can stay out of trouble, he is one of the most – if you just talk to evaluators about football, which these guys can't do, they've got to factor in injury, character, background, tendencies, attitude. But if you strip it away and just talk football, Reuben Foster is one of the 5 or 7 best football players in this draft. So if they can keep him in line, that's a heck of a first day for them. I mean, they got 2 of the 7 or 8 real blue chip players, and they got them in a span of 30 picks.
Jason Lock and Ford with us. You know, Jason, to the point you just made, if you just talk football and you strip it all away, Gary Conley is a first round pick. We know that. But that's not how you can approach that one or look at him that way. Knowing what we know about him and the fact that he's being investigated for sexual assault, you were one of the few people, though, who still said that he could end up going in the first round. He did. So what do you make of the Raiders taking him at number 24?
Yeah, by this time yesterday, I had talked to enough teams who had done enough homework on the situation. And remember, this wasn't, you know, Tunsil from a year ago where it goes down, you know, 6 hours, whatever, 60 minutes before the draft. The teams had 3 or 4 days to really do their work on this situation. And you had 3 witnesses involved. Teams were talking directly to the witnesses. Teams were obviously talking to the lawyers. Teams had their NFL security people trying to speak to whoever they could in the Cleveland Police Department. There was a lot of corroborating statements from those witnesses. There was a lot of work done behind the scenes, talking to Gary on polygraph test. His agents did a great job handling this situation, and I was hearing by this time yesterday that there were at least 3 or 4 teams that were very comfortable taking him in the first round at the right spot. And look, had Houston not made the trade up for a quarterback, Mike Vrabel, their defensive coordinator, recruited Conley to Ohio State, and the Texans were doing a ton of work on him. Seattle was making a lot of phone calls and doing a lot of work. The Saints were doing the same thing. The Eagles were doing the same thing, and so were the Raiders. So I think for the Raiders, that could be a slam dunk pick for them. Because of Lattimore's hamstring issues, some thought prior to these allegations that Conley was the cleanest, best corner in this draft. If that's the case and they got him at 24, kudos to them.
Jason Lock and Ford joining us. All right, before you go, 3 quarterbacks, JLC, went in the first round. Which of the 3, Trubisky, Mahomes, Deshaun Watson, of the 3, who do you think's got the brightest future?
I like Mahomes. I said early on in this process he was going to go in the first round, he was going to go in the top half of the first round, and somebody might move up to get him. And it happened. And luckily for him, it was the best-case scenario. A team that doesn't have to play him right away, a team that has their quarterback of the present in Alex Smith, a team with a very good cast. I mean, you start looking at the talent they have, explosive talent on offense now, and an absolute quarterback guru in Andy Reid. I don't think he could have asked for a better scenario. I'd much prefer that than Chicago giving all that up to move up 1 pick with a bad team and no talent, and Trubisky probably playing sooner rather than later this season. And even, you know, the situation with Watson, where Houston feels like they're going to the Super Bowl, but all we need is a quarterback right now. And, I mean, it's going to be hard for Tom Savage to keep Watson off the field if he doesn't come out gangbusters. So I like where Mahomes is short-term and long-term. He's got a lot of gunslinger in him, for better or for worse. He's got the best arm in the draft, I believe. He's got a great pedigree with the family he comes from. He's been around pro sports and locker rooms his whole life. He's got leadership skills. I'd bet on him.
All right, so finally, you mentioned you're gearing up for night two or day two. The Packers have the first pick in the second round tonight. Do you think they're going to use that pick, or do you think somebody's going to talk them into
I think they'll trade down again. I mean, if they feel like they can move down a few more spots and still address an immediate concern like corner and offensive line, and there's plenty of DBs, and there's at least a few offensive linemen who probably weren't first-round grade but could have gone in the first round. So, you know, I think they're sitting pretty. Forrest Lamp, you've got Obi Malafonwu, the safety / corner out of UConn. You've got King, the corner from Wisconsin. They've got 4 to 5 guys who probably make a lot of sense for them on their board right now, and they probably could get at least one of them a few more spots down. So, you know, you look at those, we know what Ted Thompson does. You look at his protege, Jerry Gatto, who traded out of the round after a couple trades to get there, and traded out of one entirely. When they see a board shaping up the way they like it, they trust their evaluations and they're willing to move down.
In terms of your stream, you mentioned that. I was watching last night. I thought my man Pete Prisco's head was going to explode when he was ranting on about that big trade. Were you at all concerned for your safety?
I was sitting right next to Prisco, actually. No, Pete's all bark and no bite. He's the best. But he definitely gets animated, and he's willing to grade these picks in real time, which we have a lot of fun with.
Steve Keim is my guest. Steve, it's great to have you back. How are you?
Romy, doing fantastic and great to be back on.
Steve, so good of you to come back on, especially on a day like this. You had that 13th pick, so let me start there. How many different scenarios did you run through in preparing for that pick, and then how many of those scenarios included you picking Hassan Reddick?
Well, Romy, we went through a ton of different scenarios, and really it was tough to forecast the way the top 12 picks would go, particularly now that you look back and see that the way that the run on quarterbacks went. But there were very few times that we expected Hassan Reddick to be there. And in fact, I anticipated he would go anywhere from 9 to 11. So the fact that he was there at 13 for us to select was a little bit of a shock to me. And after the Texans made the trade and selected Deshaun Watson, it didn't take long to get Hassan Reddick on the phone.
Steve Keim joining us. I want to talk about that phone call in a minute, Steve, but I had Reddick on the show last Friday. He's a really unique guy, a former walk-on, somebody who's had to battle and fight for everything he has. When you first met with him at the Combine, what was your immediate impression?
That this guy has got an eternal chip that sits on his shoulder, and his passion, his energy are really infectious. When he walked in our interview room and we met with him for the first time, he had this infectious smile, this way about him, yet at the same time you could tell that he was a passionate guy who had a presence. And that was one of the things that was, you know, that drew us to him. Not only that, but he checked every box. You know, when you look at the scouting evaluation part of it, I mean, the tape was excellent, 10.5 sacks. He was explosive. He went to the Senior Bowl. He played stacked linebacker, which he has never done before, and he looked like a, you know, a guy who made the transition with ease, which we know is not hard to do when you talk about playing with your eyes and instincts. And then he went to the combine and blew up the test running 4.4 at 240 pounds, and he's 6'2". And then we just talked to the kid more and more and brought him out here to Phoenix. And again, just the mentality that he has and the adversity that he has faced in his life, we just felt like he'd be a great fit in this organization.
Steve Keim, Arizona GM, joining us, breaking it all down. I love that line about he's got an eternal chip that sits on his shoulder. So when you're evaluating a player, obviously talent is a major thing, but how important is it to have that attitude and that chip on the shoulder as well?
Well, I mean, I think it just gives you that extra drive. I mean, a lot of these young men were big-time five-star recruits, or they were coddled at whatever college they played at. Here's a guy who had to work for everything he got, being a walk-on at Temple, growing up tough, And, you know, he has really, really made a tough situation turn into a success story. And I admire him for that. And that'll carry on into his NFL career, because these guys, they all face adversity, whether it's adversity in their home life, adversity on the field. And the guys who are weak mentally and weak physically, they don't know how to respond. Well, when things are going to happen to Hassan Reddick, he is definitely going to answer the bell, in my opinion.
Steve Keim joining us. Now, your head coach, Bruce Arians, said that Reddick reminds me of Von Miller. That's a quote. That's not a comparison you throw around very lightly. It's a really high bar to set. Do you see some of Miller in Reddick?
Well, you know, Von Miller is a unique guy. You know, I would say something more along the lines of a Ryan Shazier with the Steelers, a guy who, in terms of the size, the speed, and explosiveness. Now, that being said, this kid is a little more unique in terms of positional flexibility, with the chance to play outside linebacker in our scheme, to play inside. And there's no secret that we have coveted hybrid players here for the past several years, talking about guys like Tyrann Mathieu, who can play deep, they can play in the slot, guys like Daniel Buchanan, who have played safety, they can play will linebacker. So to me, this game has become a matchup game and an isolation and space game. So to have a linebacker who can not only bounce to play outside linebacker and rush the pass, or to play stacked and in the box and cover backs and tight ends, to me, I think it's a tremendous benefit.
Yeah, I mean, in your system, that flexibility is key. But what's it say about a guy that he's not only flexible and he can play in a hybrid type of situation, but that this guy could not only play a different position, but learn a different position and learn it in only a matter of days?
Yeah, I mean, that's what's amazing to me, because, again, you know, I mean, that's like, you know, using your right hand all your life and then all of a sudden having to use your left hand to do some things, and it's an awkward thing. And then he made it look easy. And I have not scouted a guy in 19 years of doing this that I've seen make that transition look so seamless as he did at the Senior Bowl. So, you know, I think the sky's the limit. I think there are definitely things where he can improve upon. But the good news is his character and intangibles are top-notch. So once he gets through baggage claim, I have no doubt that he'll make a strong contribution, whether it's starting on special teams and playing in some type of role in our defense.
Steve Keim joins us for a few more moments. You mentioned the run on quarterbacks. There had been some talk going into the draft that you might be interested in a quarterback. I know you're very pleased with Reddick. We had a long conversation about him. At any point, though, were you thinking about moving up and maybe taking a shot at a quarterback?
No, you know, the one thing that I'll say is, and I've said this many times, is you don't want to force the pick. So we set our board from 1 to 120. We grade, you know, rank them in the way that we would take them. And, you know, Hassan Reddick was one of the top three players on our board. So regardless of the situation, we sat back, we were patient, we saw the way that the players were falling, and we knew we were going to get a good player at 13, and it just so happened to be one of the top three guys on our board. So it couldn't have worked out any better. And I think that's the key to it, is to trust your board and good things will happen.
Steve, it's amazing when you think about the commitment of the entire organization, I mean, top to bottom, and what goes into a night like that. And for so many unique days and nights that you have in that job, probably nothing quite like the first night of the draft. I mean, what's that mood like, and what's it like inside that room? Is it fun? Is it loose? Is it tense? Is it all those things? What exactly does it feel like?
That's a great way to describe it, Romy. It's a moment of emotion. I mean, it's, you know, you got to remember, too, now, our scouts have worked on this draft since the previous May. You know, we've been on the road countless hours. We had over 5,000 reports written on college prospects. Over 800 of them were written as guys who we thought were legitimate NFL prospects. And then we whittled that down to 120 players that we would draft for us. So the things that go behind the scenes would be shocking to most NFL fans. And it's all a fun of the part of the process. I mean, it's really kind of a surreal feeling after you make a pick, because you think about all the time and the effort that went into it. But as you've seen, I mean, the excitement about the NFL draft just goes to show you that the popularity of the NFL is at an all-time high.
So finally, the call that you made, and when I had Reddick on the show, we talked about that moment and what it would be like when he hears his name called. Now you're the one who picked the phone and you make that call. It's a phone call that everything. So what's it like when you're the guy making the call, knowing that you're going to make somebody's dream come true?
Well, that's a part of my job that's so rewarding. So many times, you know, in this position, you think about, you know, the wins and the losses and how difficult those parts of the job are. But then you look at different times like this where, you know, you're able to make a walk-on player at Temple's dream come true. So to be able to change somebody's life, to me, is what makes my job special. And I made sure that when I called him, I let him know that we were going to go back to that steakhouse that I took him on his visit. But this time around, Romy, he was paying.
I love it. I love it. Which steakhouse? Which steakhouse and what kind of a steak are you going to get?
Well, it's Steak 44, and because he's paying this time, Romy, I think I'm going to go with the Wagyu, which I think probably runs slightly over $100. I think he can afford it now.
Yeah, I love that, Steve. All right, so where do you come out on Wagyu? Is Wagyu, and I've had Wagyu, it's very, very expensive, very, very rich. Does it live up to the hype, and where do you come out on dry aged?
You know what, Romy, growing up as a PA guy from a middle-class family, I would probably say I'm not a Wagyu kind of guy, but if I'm not flipping the bill, I can certainly handle it. And it was tender, and it had a lot of flavor, I can promise you that.
Steve, Wagyu, it's like a different meal altogether. It's like not even a steak, right?
It's got this buttery flavor to it. I mean, it is fantastic. And like I said, Hassan is definitely flipping the bill next
good,
time.
Do it. You got to go Wagyu. Ben Galver is my guest. Ben, good to have you back. How are you? Let me start with the Raptors. They eliminated the Bucks last night, Ben, which means we have to bid farewell to the Greek Freak for the season. When you look at what this guy did this year at age 22 and with all the injuries Milwaukee had, what's that say about Giannis' future?
I mean, to me, he was the single best story of the entire NBA season. That includes Russell Westbrook. That includes James Harden, everything else. I mean, so rarely do we see a guy break through like he did in terms of not only his statistical accomplishments, you know, leading his team in every category that matters, but also popularity-wise. I mean, this guy got almost 1 million All-Star votes. He really vaulted his way into sort of the upper echelon of superstars. But what I loved about the way they lost last night was that it's going to serve as perfect motivation for him because, you know, on the deciding play of the game, he has the opportunity to pull up for a three-pointer, tie the game, potentially force overtime, but he didn't trust his jumper. You know, he hesitated. He drives to the hoop to take a quick two because he didn't really believe in his outside shooting ability. That's the one hole left in Giannis's game. I mean, he's pretty much one of the most complete players as it stands right now. He just needs to add that jumper. I think being confronted with this idea that, you know, your entire season can come down to one shot. Are you willing to take it and can you make it? Is exactly the right note to send him into this offseason because he's now going to be thinking about that moment for the next 3 or 4 months. And I bet he comes back to training camp with a much improved outside shot. And then we're going to be talking about him potentially as an MVP candidate here, if not next season, then the season after.
Ben Galver joining us. I was going to say just that point. I mean, if he comes back with a 3-point shot and a better perimeter game, the way he attacks the basket, the way he does right now, I mean, what is that upside? Are we talking about a guy who's a top 5 player in the NBA or maybe even better than that?
Yeah, absolutely. No question about it. And it's not just about him individually. I think a key point is, I mean, look at how much it helps when you've got a lead ball handler or a lead playmaker who can also play big on defense. And at times against the Raptors, you know, he was playing center on defense, and that really opens up the possibilities for huge spread lineups where you can get tons and tons of shooters on the court. We've seen that with the Golden State Warriors, you know, their death lineups with Draymond Green. We've seen that with Cleveland when LeBron will occasionally play center and they surround him with four shooters and they just become impossible to guard. I think it's not just about Giannis becoming one of these top 3 or top 5 type players himself, but also Milwaukee's offensive potential to me is just off the charts. If you've got him out there with 3 or 4 shooting threats next season, this could be one of the most devastating attacks around the league.
Ben Galver joining us. He writes for SI.com. Now, Ben, what about Toronto? They win 3 straight. They fell behind 2-1 in that series. They advanced to face Cleveland. How do you think the Raptors match up with the Cavaliers?
It's tough for them. I mean, clearly they showed a lot of resolve in not choking away that lead late. I mean, they basically had a 25-point lead. It completely got away from them, but they were able to stabilize down the stretch and take it home. But they're not going to have the ability to have those droughts scoring-wise like they did against Milwaukee, against the Cleveland team, because for all the talk about Cleveland's defensive weaknesses, and that talk is warranted. I mean, they have not played consistent defense. What we have seen from the Cavaliers has been elite offense, you know, some of the best offense of LeBron James's career from a team perspective, and also some of the best offense anywhere around the league, whether it's Golden State or Houston in this postseason. So you're going to find Toronto really in a position where they're going to try to make the game ugly. I mean, they're going to try to use guys like PJ Tucker, Serge Ibaka, to just try to ugly the game up defensively and slow down Cleveland's attack. I'm not sure they're going to be capable of doing it. When I look at this matchup, I see the Cavaliers as more explosive. Obviously, they have the best player in the series in LeBron. He's had a nice chance to rest here. Obviously, they have home court advantage. They also have the knowledge that they beat Toronto in last year's Eastern Conference Finals. There's a lot of confidence that comes from that. So to me, I kind of like the way Dwayne Casey played it after the post-game press conference last night. You know, he basically was playing the disrespect card, saying nobody believes in the Raptors. I think that's the right way to handle it if you're Toronto, because all of the major kind of matchup breakdowns favor Cleveland.
You want to talk about ugling something up. How about game five between the Clippers and the Utah Jazz? Now, after that game, Doc Rivers said, quote, this team is not going to quit. You could see it in the locker room, end quote. Yeah, they're not going to quit. I get that. But do the Clippers have enough to win this series?
Man, Utah came out of that game looking like they were poised to win that series. I mean, that was a really impressive performance by them because Chris Paul gave them everything they could handle down the stretch. You know, he was kind of getting in Gordon Hayward's face at one point. He's hitting big three-pointers. He was leading big runs. And Utah just withstood every single push from the Clippers and kind of did so with ease. I mean, guys like Gordon Hayward and Joe Johnson are stepping up big time on offense for them. It's amazing that Rudy Gobert is back in the lineup. I don't know how this guy got healed in like 5 or 6 days from an injury that I thought was going to end his season. It's ridiculous. And they're going to go back to their home court, which has been a big advantage. I mean, if you contrast Utah's home court with the Staples Center's home court environment, it's night and day. And I think it's going to be real hard for L.A. And it really comes down to the Blake Griffin injury for me, because with Blake Griffin, they had all the matchup advantages. You know, Utah was forced to kind of put guys like Joe Johnson on Blake and try to contain him physically. When you take Blake off, life becomes so much easier for those guys defensively. They don't have to work as hard. There's just really no threat to step into Blake's shoes for L.A. And then also it just gives them more room to work offensively. You know, Doc's just scrambling with his lineups, trying to find guys to slow down Hayward. Joe Johnson, he hasn't been able to do it.
You know, agreed, Ben. They don't match up. They don't match up without Blake Griffin. But on that topic, if the Clippers do lose this series, or if they advance and they lose in the next round, how do you think Blake Griffin is going to approach his free agency?
Well, there's been so much talk about the Clippers wanting to keep Blake and keep Chris and continue that going forward. And I think we should look at this decision through Blake's eyes. He's been in L.A. for a long time. You know, clearly he's happy in the city. He loves the city. He's never said anything bad about the franchise. He's always been a loyal guy. But my big question is, is there more out there for him? You know, he's clearly the number two guy behind Chris on that team. I think he always will be, no matter how much Chris ages. I mean, just personality-wise, that's always going to be Chris's team. I just wonder if Blake can, think bigger, and think outside the box a little bit. And is there a situation where he can go be the main guy? Is there another market where he'd be able to spread his wings a little bit? Because I think, as a playmaker, he's right up there with the best forwards in the entire NBA in terms of, setting up his teammates, throwing passes, running a one-man fast break. I just feel like maybe he hasn't totally reached his full potential over these last couple of years. I remember back in 2014, this was an MVP candidate, and since then he's kind of plateaued a little bit. Of course, injuries have played a role in that, but I would actually kind of hope that Blake would take a long look around the league and see, what other destinations are out there that might make sense for him. I think he's easily the number one name in terms of star power on this summer's free agency market. When you look at guys who might actually move, I mean, I don't expect Chris to move. I don't think Steph Curry or Kevin Durant are going anywhere. That kind of leaves Blake Griffin in a discussion with guys like Kyle Lowry or Gordon Hayward as some of the marquee names. That should generate a real market for Blake's services, and I hope he takes a long look at it. I've asked him questions about free agency over the last couple of years, and he always has procrastinated. He's always pushed it off, saying, I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to talk about that. Doesn't make sense to talk about next year. Well, now is the time for Blake to really dig into those decisions and to think, what's going to make him happy? Is he okay with the scenario where, they go out in the first round year after year, or they struggle to get over the hump in the Western Conference Finals? Can he find another scenario out there that will give him a better chance at chasing a championship and maybe give him a larger role? I wouldn't be surprised if he's able to find that.
I can't imagine that he'd be very happy losing in the first round every single year and being a number two and that never changing. Ben, breaking story this morning. According to a report in The Vertical, Larry Bird is stepping down. Larry Bird is stepping down as president of the Indiana Pacers. So what does that mean for the future of the Pacers and, in particular, Paul George?
Oh, I don't know if you saw him in that Indy car last week in New York City, but he rode that Indy car right into the sunset, didn't he?
Right.
It's interesting. I think the key thing to know about the Pacers is Kevin Pritchard's going to take over. Now, Kevin Pritchard really made his name in the NBA as GM of the Blazers, where he was building around young guys like Brandon Roy, Greg Oden, and LaMarcus Aldridge. I mean, he gets excited about the idea of kind of helping a young roster, realize its full potential. I mean, that's been something that he's always enjoyed doing. And so to me, when I look at, Larry Bird, more of an old school guy kind of heading out stage left and Kevin Pritchard taking over, my initial read is that makes it more likely that they would be willing to trade Paul George this summer and try to reimagine a younger Pacers roster building around a guy like Miles Turner as their new franchise guy. It just kind of fits with what Kevin Pritchard's philosophy has been in terms of establishing a culture and establishing a core group of guys who want to play together. And I think chemistry was an issue for Indiana all season long. We saw it from Paul George's grumblings. And if you're a small market team, you just don't want to be over the barrel. You know, if your superstar is not happy, and I think he made it pretty clear throughout the playoffs and at different points this season that he wasn't fully content there in Indiana, sometimes you're better off just, you know, moving on as quickly as possible, you know, cashing out and getting as much as you can for him. I wouldn't be surprised at all if this summer Paul George is on the move and, you know, maybe to a bigger market team or just somewhere else where he feels like he has a better chance to contend now. And if you're the Pacers, that could be the best thing for you too, because now you can really start to plan your future, you know, not just, you know, worry, you know, night and day about whether Paul George is happy and whether you can kind of keep him in free agency.
Rui is on hold. What the hell? Why not, right? Let's go there right now. Jeff, Southern California. Jeff, good morning. What's up?
What's up, Romy? Hey, Steve, thanks for the introduction. Hey, Jim, that draft last night was crazy. I mean, the Bears mortgaged everything to go up and get the second overall pick. I mean, I haven't seen a decision that bad since Ron decided to return Nicole's sunglasses back in the 90s. Hey, and now while we're on the subject of bad decisions, Rome, you've given out three golden tickets. The first one to Rick in Buffalo. Rome, did you notice that Rick in Buffalo talks like this? I think it's because Rick and Buffalo cannot simultaneously speak and breathe at the same time. And you're going to let him in the smack off? Jim, there's no way this guy has the mental horsepower to be successful in the smack off. The next ticket you gave to was Dan in Denver. Dan in Denver looks like the love child of Chewbacca and Tanya Harding. I mean, this guy is garbage. And lastly, you gave one to Tyler in Edmonton. I like Tyler, but I'm scared, Jim, if he actually wins and gets the grand prize of $5,000, that it's going to totally dismantle the GDP of Canada. Do you know how far $5,000 goes in Canada? It's like 17 billion Canadian shekels. Now, the real reason I'm calling is to go for you, Lef. Last year, Lef showed up at your studio, Jim. You gave him the grand prize. I wouldn't have given him the grand prize. I would have given him a restraining order. Lef, I'm coming for you. I'm going to rip your heart out. I'm the best ever. I'm the most brutal, most vicious, and most ruthless champion there's ever been. No one can stop me. Lef is a conqueror? No, I'm Alexander. He's no Alexander. I'm the best ever. There's never been anybody as ruthless as me. I'm Sonny Liston. I'm Jack Dempsey. There's no one like me. I'm from SoCal. There's no one that can match me. My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable. And I'm just ferocious. I want to eat your heart out. I want to eat his children. I'm out.
Chad in L.A. Let's go to the phones. What's up, Chad? How are you?
Good, Rome. Hey, thanks again for that top 10 finish last year. It means everything, man. But this year, I'm here to take your money. Defending champs don't come around, acting like bum rushing the studio was a walk-off. Where you at, Les? I saw the draft last night, Romy. How about Conley? Normally, when you commit a crime right before the draft, you drop 10 to 15 spots. But when Conley saw that the Raiders had a first-round pick, he commits a crime to go up and get them. Perfect fit. Now, for you rookies who want to learn how to rap, take note of how I wrecked Vic in NoCal. Speaking of which, NoCal doesn't stand for Northern California. NoCal means Vic is no longer in California. When we all went to Del Mar, he's the only person who had to drive north to get there. With those fake Tijuana sunglasses, he should change his name to Vic Below Cal. Not only for where he lives, but also for where his calls have been ranking. Below Cal. Vic, you sound like a telemarketer. When you call the show, does the call screener ever demand to speak with your manager? Or does he think you're trying to sell him a subscription to ESPN Deportes? I wish someone would Deportes crap phone calls out of here. Feel free to respond, Vic, because if you don't, my odds on Stucknut will go up 3 spots. If you do, I'll jump up 4 spots. Hey, Rome, call me the assassin, because I'm straight up assing Vic's face right now. And that's how it's done, rookies. Click.
Chad in L.A.
With the first pick in the 2017 NFL Draft, the Cleveland Browns select...
The week that was...
Welcome to the jungle.
What's going on, clones?
Nice to have you here. Hope you had a great weekend. Let's get this thing started.
I've got basketball. I've got baseball. I've got hockey. I've got some good interviews. I've got open phone lines. I want to start with the Thunder and the Rockets.
Russ
let the reporter know he was not having any of that, nor was he going to let any outsider drive a wedge between he and his teammates.
Yeah! Trying to make us go against each other, trying to make against Russell.
Next question.
No, I think we're going to keep the microphone. I had a question for
Scott. Out of my cold dead hands. Easy, Russ.
Next questioning.
A guy.
Next question.
And not letting a teammate answer a perfectly valid question is not great leadership.
Next question.
Lee Jenkins is my guest. What's up, bud? You keeping busy?
Yeah, I just felt like I should need a voice disguiser so the Mark and Hollywood references don't come pouring in, but I'm sure they will anyway.
Smack up the O. There.
Fan yelling out to me, F you, Patrick Bradley.
You're over the line if you get up in a player's face and you F-bomb him repeatedly. What, Rome? You can't do that? You can't stand over a guy and F-bomb him repeatedly?
Not that good, minority owner's son. That's not that good.
Lorenzo Cain is my guest.
My mom always taught me to be humble. The culture, I think, has definitely changed, but just the way it is. Do the best you can, try to adjust, just try to make the best of it.
I'm going to stand by.
Why dial it back right now? You don't give 110, you give 120. No, you give 200, 2,000, 2 million, 2 billion percent, infinity percent, infinity times 2%. Jeff Passan is my guest.
It would not shock me at all if Cal in Vegas put ketchup on his hot dog.
Have you put in any time to thinking about your smack-off call?
Jim, I don't need time. I'm still the best man, and I'm going to bring it to the SmackDown.
I wish I had some kind of cool story for you.
No! That's wrong. Think I'm going to kill this guy for doing that? Or do you think I'm going to go out there and try and get myself an excite bike? Ducks captain Ryan Getzlaff.
It's about leading by example. When you come into the playoffs, it's, you know, everybody is here for the same reason. You know that. You identified that.
The Clippers are cursed. Bill Walton, Danny Manning ripped up his knee. Marcus Johnson, Sean Livingston.
You couldn't find a way to work Loy Vaught into that? No Michael Olowokandi references? Chris Kaman? My man Charles Smith. Pooh Richardson. Fire beware. Draft at your own risk. Wait until 1 minute after your pick. Hell, walk up on stage with a giant bong in your hand. Daniel Jeremiah is my guest.
You've got the Jets who are, man, Jim, have you looked at that roster? Last night I was just kind of cleaning up some research and I went back through and just pulled up that depth chart. That is gross.
Email.
Yo, dude, you look great. Nice rig, man. So what do you do now? Just staying on the grind, bro. You know that. You meet my lady? Yeah, where did you meet her? Just staying on the grind, bro.
Your call came from under. You cover balls, you better let you go.
Final fluid situation. I've had it 3 times. All the fluid is leaking out in your skull.
TJ Oshie is my guest. So is there anything you can take away from last year and apply to this year, or do you just look at it as, there it goes again?
Just in my defense, this is the PR guy's cell phone, so my phone will be blowing up like this.
I called back when it was the jungle, baby, and then I hear this guy, and I'm thinking, man, who am I listening to? Somebody turned the jungle into petting zoo.
Jerry in Ohio, I'm glad to hear your landscaping business is going well, though, because that's the only bush you've seen since.
Jazz have won game 5.
Jazz Nation.
Rome, let me tell you what's wrong with those bitches in Los Angeles.
Even State Farm can't insure that.
That look on Steve Ballmer's face.
ISO Joe.
Mic drop, rack me, bud.
Mike Freeman is my guest.
I actually wrote the following words. The Browns may have a good draft.
Whoa, 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 whoa.
I want them to stop sucking.
I'm going to find out who that cat's barber is. And I'm going to sit in that chair, and I'm going to tell that dude, give me the Mark Davis. I brought my own bowl.
Isaiah, left-hand dribble, stop and start. Around Lopez, switches to the right hand.
Did you see Isaiah carry the ball?
This is Seymour Butts.
Owned.
My guest is Bob Myers.
Jim, you either got to come to a playoff game or try to go back to San Quentin. You got to come to one of those two things.
I'm on the
playoff,
clock.
One of our playoff games or San Quentin.
Thanks for the vine, Jim. And no need dropping that golden ticket on me today. Just put it up on the rack. Later, dude.
What the hell? Give it to him, Al.
I've got a golden ticket.
Bears fan finds out that Mitchell Trubisky is their quarterback of the future. What is the worst thing that anybody could ever tell you? Your reaction to that might not be as bad as this guy's reaction. Jason, Lockenfora.
A little baffling. And not just that they draft, but they moved up one spot to draft him when San Francisco wasn't going to draft him.
I think John Fox and Ryan Pace have credentials.
And I'm just ferocious. I want to eat your heart out. I want to eat your children. I'm out.
Steve Keim is my guest.
This guy has got an eternal chip that sits on his shoulder. His passion, his energy are really infectious.
We've been talking about the next level for this show. You may have a way of elevating this thing. You may have a larger role.
What?
Maybe.
Yeah, what's happening?
Doug McDermott. Marcus Fizer didn't want any of that.
I have lots of blood in urine.
I smell awesome.
So I don't need the f-
rule.
That's not that funny.
Next question.
And I'm going to bring it to the SmackDown.
War Trapper all the time.
Michael Jordan or Javier? I'm going with Javier.
Kelly Holcomb.
Great to have you. Happen to be buzzer? Give you a buzzer?
You know, men lie, women lie.
I'm HIV, bruh, and you are
the Spinal Tap.
Find me later, man.
Click.
Good night now.
That's it. Thank you very much for listening. You know I appreciate you, and I appreciate that. Hit subscribe. Tell a friend. Trust the podcast. Check back Monday for more of the Daily Jungle. See you then.
Find